Good evening. Welcome back, Ritu. Looks good. Looks very nice. No, it's just right. And you too, Wendy. Welcome back. We have a new face tonight. You've been here before?
Years and years ago.
I thought you were familiar. I don't remember your name.
Kathy.
Kathy. Welcome. So I've had some very intense Zen moments this week. It's been quite a remarkable thing to... I've had them before. No, I've had several occasions to kiss my own life goodbye, and this time I kissed my house goodbye. Fortunately, I didn't have to, in the end, give it up, but I certainly was in a position to do it. I had my bags all packed and the list made of everything to take, but the wind changed and went south instead of, or went west instead of east, and other people's houses burned down instead. So it was an amazing experience, you know, first trying to find out where the fire was, because if you know it's a fire but you don't know exactly where, and then deciding, you know, what do I do? Do I try to fight the fire, which is what some people do? I'm too chicken. I didn't even imagine that I could. And now it's so sweet. I look around my house and it's like I have it all over again, brand new. It's just wonderful and so tenuous at the same time. It could be gone just like that. Amazing. There were people who built impregnable, fire-impregnable houses, and they burned to the ground. I looked at my little wooden house with all these trees around, and I thought, oh, well, doesn't even help to try, really. Everything comes and goes in a flash. Friend asked me, she said, did you go around your house and kiss all the doors? So we're on page 123, I believe. I bet you know, Julian.
Yes, experience, not loss.
Yes. Want to begin?
Page 123, experience, not philosophy. There is something blasphemous in talking about how Buddhism is perfect as a philosophy or teaching without knowing what it actually is. Although there are many people in this century who are interested in Buddhism, few of them are interested in its pure form. Many of them are interested in studying the teaching or the philosophy of Buddhism. Capturing it, comparing it to other religions, they appreciate how satisfying Buddhism is intellectually. But whether Buddhism is philosophically deep or good or perfect is not the point. To keep our practice in its pure form is our purpose. Sometimes I feel there is something blasphemous in talking about how Buddhism is perfect as a philosophy or teaching without knowing what it actually is.
To practice Zazen with a group is the most important thing for Buddhism and for us, because this practice is the original way of life. Without knowing the origin of things, we cannot appreciate the result of our life's effort. Our effort must have some meaning. To find the meaning of our effort is to find the original source of our effort. We should not be concerned about the result of our effort before we know its origin. If the origin is not clear and pure, our effort will not be pure, and its result will not satisfy us. When we resume our original nature and incessantly make our effort from this base, we will appreciate the result of our effort, moment after moment, day after day, year after year. This is how we should appreciate our life. Those who are attached only to the result of their effort will not have any chance to appreciate it, because the result will never come. But if moment by moment your efforts arise from its pure origin, all you do will be good, and you'll be satisfied with whatever you do.
Zazen practice is the practice in which we pursue the pure way of life, beyond any gaining idea and beyond fame and profit. By practice, we just keep our original nature as it is. There is no need to intellectualize about what our pure original nature is, because it is beyond our intellectual understanding. And there is no need to appreciate it, because it is beyond our appreciation. So just to sit without any idea of gain and with the purest intention to remain as quiet as our original nature, this is our practice.
In the Zendo, there is nothing fancy. We just come and sit. After communicating with each other, we go home and resume our own everyday activity as a continuity of our pure practice, enjoying our true way of life. Yet, this is very unusual. Whenever I go, people ask me, "What is Buddhism?" with their notebooks ready to write down my answer. You can imagine how I feel. But here, we just practice Zazen. That is all we do, and we are happy in this practice. For us, there is no need to understand what Zen is. We are practicing Zazen. So, for us, there is no need to know what Zen is intellectually. This is, I think, very unusual for American society.
In America, there are many patterns of life and many religions, so it may seem quite natural to talk about the differences between various religions and compare one with the other. But for us, there is no need to compare Buddhism to Christianity. Buddhism is Buddhism, and Buddhism is our practice. We do not even know what we are doing when we just practice with a pure mind. So we cannot compare our way to some other religion. Some people may say that Zen, Buddhism, is not religion. Maybe that is so, or maybe Zen Buddhism is religion before religion. So it might not be religion in the usual sense, but it is wonderful. And even though we do not study what it is intellectually, even though we do not have any cathedral or fancy ornaments, it is possible to appreciate our original nature. This is, I think, quite unusual.
This is one of my favorite ones. I really like this one. Some years ago, when their Buddhist magazines started coming out, I don't remember which one it was, but Zen Master Rama used to advertise full-page color ads in these Buddhist magazines, promising enlightenment. Come to a weekend workshop and pay many hundreds of dollars. It was not cheap. You could be guaranteed enlightenment. And it was such a joke. such a beautiful joke. But he made lots and lots of money. And there's been a lot of discussion a couple of years ago about him. Yeah, I think he's passed away and left very large fortune to Tricycle Magazine. And sponsored some sort of ecumenical or multi-Buddhist kind of meeting in New York City every year. And there were some Zen teachers who were getting all hot under the collar about this connection and saying it wasn't really proper and what should we do about Zen Master Rama? So it's so natural to want to get something out of our life, basically, and then a practice. We come and there's a kind of promise in this. And yet it's a mysterious promise because you can't really put your finger on it. And it's very easy to fall into the ambitious mode. If I just do this and this, then everything will be okay. It'll all be fine. And the trouble is, life changes continually, moment by moment, as he says. So as soon as it changes, we're not there anymore. Or you could say it the other way around. As soon as it changes, we're there again and again and again and again. But we don't really know where we are exactly as it changes. Not so that we can figure it out, not so that we can understand it and write an essay or a treatise about it. It's just so, it keeps morphing from one thing to another. We keep morphing from one thing to another. In the 1700s, I've been reading a history. In the 1700s, there was a Zen master named Manzan who went back to Dogen. And Dogen had not been taken seriously for hundreds of years. They would take out his Shobo Genso, which was on long, rolled up. They would unroll them and air them out and walk them around the Buddha hall and chant. But nobody read them. And so Manzan started reading them and getting interested in what they were and discovering that in his mind, what they were calling Zen anymore in the 1700s in Japan wasn't really Zen at all. That it had this gaining idea, the idea that you sit in this yogic position, it's really a piece of yoga, our sitting upright, and that the sitting itself is the Zen thing that will lead one to an enlightened state. And then one becomes a master and sits with people until they become masters, and then it goes on that way. From the Middle Ages, he said, we have all been deluded, sentient beings, believing that we must put our strength into Zazen and attain awakening, and then there is no need to do Zazen. Said, when your own wisdom light shines clearly, whatever you're doing, wherever you are, you're free. So he reminded us and them back in the 17th century that it's about the awakened mind of us that's central to our practice. Awakened in Zazen, awakened washing the dishes, awakened driving the car. Dogen called what we do practice enlightenment, as if it were one thing. That was his understanding, that it's one thing. One thing that we can't even quite identify because we're doing it already. And of course we go in and out of greed, hatred, and delusion. They uncurl in us and burn up in us, and then things get clear, and then the whole life of us is a continual flow of light and dark. Sometimes light, sometimes dark. Sometimes things open up for us, sometimes they close up tight as a drum. He says the best way is to sit with a firm conviction in our true nature, better than to read books or study the philosophy of Buddhism. This true nature of us that he calls Well, I've lost my place. Here we are. Here we are. I found it. To find the source of our effort is crucial to this discussion, and it's really talking about way-seeking mind. What it is that brings us to a thirst for truth. We thirst for so many things. We have so many needs and so many desires, and yet something keeps bringing us back. Something that's a big question mark brings us back to the place where we don't know anymore. Back to original mind. The thing is that it begins to seem, when we're practicing with a gaining idea, that there's me and my mind and everything else out there, and that there's something I have to do in order to reconnect or connect with everything out there. Once we sit down quietly, we begin to feel how it's already connected. And that so much of what we do is extra effort. Effort upon effort upon effort, when we don't need to go there. We're already the original mind. There isn't any out there. So our pure way of life, keeping our original nature as it is, is nothing fancy. It's nothing special. That's why I like to meet here. I think this is such a lovely place to meet and sit zazen together, and how nice it is that we're so simple and so unpretentious. With the purest intention to remain as quiet as our original nature. That's our practice. With that kind of original nature, we can be and do whatever comes up, whatever we have to be at that moment. And like everything else, we morph. One moment we're a mother, the next we're a ticket taker. The next we're milking a cow. Who knows what we are? Anything can happen. The extra that goes with it is when we say, oh, this, I can't do this, or this isn't me. Yes, it is. So it's hard to talk about this comparing Buddhism and Christianity, which is so common these days. There are books and books written about it. Thich Nhat Hanh has written a great deal about it. I'm going tomorrow to Santa Clara University to meet with Tenny Wright's class. I'm his token Buddhist that he has once a year in his meditation class. He teaches this book and Thich Nhat Hanh and the Bible and an article about boxers from the New Yorker of years ago. Very curious how he puts it together. It's pretty much the same every time. And I always hope they don't ask me about Christianity because I don't know what to say. It's not a very Christian school anymore. It used to be. It used to be entirely run by the Jesuits. And Tenney is a Jesuit. But most of the students, I think, are no longer Catholics. And so it's a different flavor. But even so, it has that. It's very hard to know what to say. Because Koban always said what Suzuki Roshi says and what feels right to me, which is that Zazen is before religion. It's a kind of foundation from which really you could create any religion, any way of devotional activity, any way of expression from that deep original place. Dogen said you should wash your mouth out with soap if you call yourself a Buddhist. Hard to say. Hard to say. So are there questions? We got time? Yes, we have time. Discussion? Julian?
Earlier you were talking about how sometimes we're like, grasping and all, you know, how we're changing, we're morphing all the time. Would you say that that's part of our original nature?
Yes.
So how do we differentiate between, I guess the adding on is the suffering. I'm just, because it seems like we're in this daze a lot, and Zazen doesn't, I guess, it's not necessarily getting us out of that particular...
Not at all.
Clouds and, you know, all that.
Yes. Well, but Zazen is about being present. It's about coming back and just being this, whatever it is.
Not judging it.
Not judging it.
Not
yes.
It.
As he says, not even appreciating it. Just being. And then from this ability to sit, as we develop it, we can become present much more often wherever we are. To just be what we are and let that be okay.
Sometimes it doesn't feel okay to...
Right.
You need to make adjustments.
Well, that's the extra. That's exactly the extra that Buddha was talking about that creates the suffering.
So if you're feeling very, uninspired in a particular...
Yes.
You can't... there seems to jog, for example. Let's say you're just feeling like totally uninspired. You just want to surf the internet all day on your computer.
I know you're not the only one.
I know, exactly.
Yes.
I mean, but you still got to get yourself out of that, or you're going to be busted.
Well, you, yes.
I mean, I...
So...
I'm just trying to find the way to point to...
There's no way to point. There's just seeing. You see what you're thinking. You see what you're doing. This is Julian at this point in time. This is me. Let's see what I'm going to do. And what do I base what I'm doing on? So once you're used to actually noticing what you're doing, then you have some basis for deciding, clearly deciding what to do and what not to do. Now, otherwise, we're kind of blindly on automatic and saying later, oh, did I do that? Did I say that? Without even having a clue where, you know. Yeah.
So if I were to recap it, I think I'm doing that. So we kind of live our lives like Zazen. You know, I haven't exercised for a year because I have that excuse. Making a judgment, feeling bad about it.
Yes.
I'd rather say, okay, I've noticed that I've made that judgment and move on.
Yes.
And then it just seems like when things click or whatever you want to call it, Zen moment or whatever, It seems it happens on its own.
Yes.
Just like with no effort.
Yes.
But at the same time, you're still practicing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very simple.
Right? It's very simple.
Okay.
That's why it's so hard.
But it seems every time, you know, the light goes on, it seems like it's the first time it's ever gone on. It's
yes.
How exciting.
Yes.
And you go...
Exactly. That's why we keep practicing.
I think there's a, this is common, there's a, someone who said that Chöbu Gyentso was like the answer to the question of why do we even have to sit?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes. Yeah. And it's volumes and volumes.
Yes.
Words and words and words. Well, it's just about 8 o'clock.